Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hey, it's Griffin.
And this is wonderful.
It sure is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh boy, I got the glow, don't I? I'm glowing, aren't I? Can you say that about yourself? Because I feel like I'm glowing.
I've never heard anyone say it about themselves, but it's true in your case.
I'm radiant, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Effervescent. Mm-hmm. My skin is glowing. My pores are clean and clear and under control. Mandy Moore came up to me and she was like, "You're glowing. Your skin makes my skin look bad and my skin is perfect because of the Proactiv." I'm just glowing, and I think it's just still Disney. I think I still got the Disney glow. And there's a lot of things trying to keep me down. There's a lot of stuff trying to get rid of this glow.
Yes.
Our whole house stinks right now because something is going bad in the dishwasher. Right now, there's an emergency in the dishwasher. If you don't hear from us tomorrow, it's because our dishwasher made some sort of horrible mess, disaster.
I'm playing this game with myself because I started it before you got home.
Yeah.
There's a lot of plastic on the top.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's probably the culprit.
I put a plastic plate in the bottom rack.
It could be any one of those things, but it could have been all of the things. But one of them did make a bad stink in the house. And so that's trying to get me down. There's a ladybug on the wall that's giving me kind of a stink eye. But I got the glow.
I mean politics.
I mean, always, yes. And not to make light of that, I'm driving getting work done on my primary whip. And so I'm driving a rental car and listening to the radio and listening to NPR and listening to the news. And it's not super good. But that's not what this show is about.
No.
This show's about good things. You got any small wonders?
I was thinking about that as I was walking into the studio today.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that if I talked for a little bit, in that time, something would come to me.
Okay.
And what I would have to say came to me is a thing.
Yes.
You go first.
I am here about Cherry Coke today. You know my affinity for cheer wine, but like it started with Cherry Coke and I still just enjoy it. Those Coca-Cola like mix them up machines excite me because it gives me the opportunity to. I used to have grenadine like in my apartment when I was still living in Huntington, so I could just like sort of splash that shit in whatever I wanted to.
Oh, is that
I mean
thing?
It's what you make like cherry cocktails with, but yeah. And I don't know. There's a big new Destiny expansion came out, so I was playing a little bit of that with Justin and some friends from home. It's a fun game still. I like playing games with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And chess videos. Been watching those again on YouTube. Just like grandmasters playing each other. It's fun to watch.
Are you playing yourself?
No, I have no one to play with, but I like watching. No, it's like pretending that I have people who play chess with me in my life. Do you think anything? Because I did three.
Oh, can I do a little, this is going to come across like a plug.
Okay.
But I really like the new podcast merch that you guys have.
Yeah, we do. We have sort of show agnostic, just podcast merch for people who are really enthusiastic about podcasts.
There's literally a tie-dyed t-shirt that just says podcasts on
one
it.
That says 100% podcasts. It's great.
A coffee mug that says, "Don't talk to me till I've had my podcast."
It was partially inspired by like the awful merch that they would sell at E3, which is the big gaming convention.
I still wear that 100% gamer
shirt. Yeah, Justin
shirt
and I
got.
Bought, when we were doing a video, just a tie-dye shirt that said 100% gamer. So it's definitely in that vein. But yeah, we're not keeping money from that. We're donating it to a opiate addiction relief charity. So yeah, macroymerch.com I think it's funny. I don't know if anybody else does. That's not me being humble. It's
for anybody that's curious. We have had conversations about wonderful merch. We're just not there yet.
Not there yet. It seems like a big commitment. who goes first?
I don't know.
Yeah, I know because we skipped last week. But I'm hoping if I keep talking. That who goes first this week is when the website loads, Rachel is up first. So we talked about this. We had an agreement that we wouldn't all talk about only Disney stuff the whole time because we had a really stupendous time. And I know there's a lot of people who are very enthusiastic about Disney and there's probably a lot of people who are not. So the compromise we struck up was half. We each get to do one. Do you want to start with your Disney thing or your not Disney thing?
I mean, I think we should do like a Disney rock block.
Let's do our Disney rock block.
And so if people aren't into Disney, they can just,
jump to the ads, baby. That's where the money is for us. I'm going to open the door and check the stink. Yeah, it's not good. It's getting worse.
Disney was wonderful. Just first off, we should say that the trip was wonderful. Mm-hmm. In general, we went with our son, who is going to be 2 in November, and the whole McElroy group with their kids, and Clint McElroy joined us, and it was just the absolute best. But the thing I wanted to talk about this week was dark rides.
Dark rides, yes.
This is an expression that you kept using and people kept using and I had never heard before.
Interesting.
It makes sense. Obviously, it's the rides where you sit on like a moving vehicle of some kind in the dark.
Yes. So think Pirates of the Caribbean or mm-hmm. Haunted Mansion or Figment or there are so many rides. I would say this is a majority of the rides that are at Disney World.
Yeah. And I appreciated them in so many new ways now that we have a small child.
Yeah, I think when we were originally planning this trip, this is like a real parenting growth moment for me, is when we were planning this trip, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I haven't been to Disney in so long. I want to ride Space Mountain. I want to see all the Star Wars stuff. I want to go to Toy Story Land. I want to go on Splash Mountain. I want to see what that Seven Dwarfs roller coaster is all about. And then I realized, like, pretty soon after that, like, we're not going to do any of that stuff. We're just going to sort of go on the dark rides and experience story time with our child. And that will be even better. And it was.
I will say that I realized that a little before you did.
You did. But I am, still a child at heart.
That's true. And it is one of the things I like about you.
True.
So this is something that has a lot of obvious benefits, one of which is that it is constantly raining and hot in Florida.
Sure.
And so it's nice to escape.
Rained every day we were there. Spent a little time in the Carousel of Progress. The Carousel of Progress, which is like an animatronics-based show where you sit in this theater and it revolves around 4 time periods. And
it was
delightful, but also weirdly dystopian in a way. Like, it starts off in the 20s and it's like the same family, and it's like the 20s and the 40s and then the 60s, and then it's like the future, but the future is like busted compared to our actual ass real future now. And really every single phase of it was like, we've got a refrigerator that's just been invented and it can hold 20 ice cubes. And
it started out with you hear those Lindbergh guys are making a plane?
But then it fast forwards to the 40s and he's like, our icebox can now hold 100 ice cubes. And it's like, so Walt, is this mainly just an like a refrigerator technology? Sure enough, every year, every like time period had
some sort of refrigerator
update.
Yeah.
There's some sort of story there, but that was nice.
So the first dark rides appeared in the late 19th century and were called scenic railways, and pleasure railways was another phrase.
Yowza! Is this like, so like, where it was like the Tunnel of Love? Was
That's
this
what
like
they're,
the
they're
prototype?
They're talking about the carnival rides.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I really thought we would make some jokes about pleasure railways, but we can move on if you want.
I mean, it's one of those things that is already so explicit. Yeah. There's not much. Oh, it's like a train and you have sex. It's like, it's called a pleasure railway.
See, this is why you're a seasoned comedy professional, Griffin.
Yeah. Or I could do like, I'll let you touch my third rail.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's where all the power is.
That's good. That's okay. Good. I feel satisfied with that.
Okay. Yeah, oh, here comes the caboose, something about the caboose.
There's caboose. So the original dark rides came largely from the Pretzel Amusement Ride Company.
Okay, I've not heard of this.
And I read about it. The citation I kept seeing was that people said that being in the car and being kind of moved back and forth and like crisscross the way that those dark rides do.
Okay.
Reminded people of a pretzel.
Okay. What was their jam? What kind of stuff did they make? Because it feels like the genre back then was probably just like
they
make out in here.
They patented the first single rail electric dark ride in 1928.
Okay. But it doesn't say like what the theme of it is or anything?
They give some examples of the early ones. A Trip to the Moon.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Began at the 1901 Pan American Exposition.
Is that based on the movie? The movie where with like the big moon face guy and he gets the rocket ship in his eye?
I don't know, babe.
I watched that when I had a fever once. is a trip to the moon. It's a well-named movie, I'll tell you that much. It's got to be, right? Because that movie, I just Googled it. That movie came out in 1902. When did The Dark Ride come out?
1901.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's not. Maybe. I don't know.
Unless the movie was based on the ride.
Somebody went on a dope dark ride.
I mean, you also know that a trip to the moon is not a terribly foreign phrase or concept.
Yeah, it's not related to the film at all. How strange. I know, but for the first dark ride called The Trip to the Moon, and then like this like momentous film called The Trip to the Moon coming out like 2 years apart from each other. Sorry. It's strange to me, but go on.
So as I was referencing, dark rides frequently change direction to improve the effect and give a sense of journey. When I was doing research, I read that all dark rides possess three core characteristics: a narrative arc, physical movement through a space, and a sense of reality or immersion.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. We had one at Camden Park, which was our local amusement park out in Cerrito Canova near Huntington, and soon to be featured in Fallout 76, which I'm so fucking excited for. And there was a haunted like cart ride that is a dark room ride, and it was very low budge, but it still scared me quite a bit.
It is interesting to me how dark rides, you have really have no sense of how much space you're covering.
Yes.
You know, like you're twisting a lot, and so it's hard to tell, but they seem huge to me every time I'm in them.
And sometimes they have dips, but they don't tell you when the dips are coming. Mm-hmm. I love that shit.
So Disney World opened in the early 70s, Disneyland in the 50s. But the dark rides, you know, that kind of made them famous are It's a Small World, which was 64. Pirates of the Caribbean was 1967, which is just crazy to think, like, the longevity of these rides.
Well, I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean did break down while we were waiting in line, so I'm not, like, super surprised, but no, it was still a lot of fun.
Well, and that's Disneyland. I don't know when they opened in Disney
True,
World.
True, true.
I imagine right when Disney World opened, they brought in some of the faves.
Some of the fresh stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. According to Phil Bloom, which is an attraction designer at American Scenic, the number to achieve a good return on investment for a dark ride is 2,000 to 2,400 people per hour.
Holy shit.
So, for example, the Haunted Mansion clocks about 2,000 riders per hour, and Pirates of the Caribbean puts 4,000 people in an hour.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm. That's so many people.
I know. It's like, I think it's... I mean, the boats are kind of always coming with those rides, you know, and they all house like, I don't know, 12 people or something. Maybe not 12, but like a fair amount.
We were talking to one of our, they have like a lift service at the park now called Minivans, which is so cute. Like,
it's very cute.
And one of the drivers used to work at the park, and they were like, yeah, I mean, if any of those rides breaks down, that's how you get the wait. If there is no like issue...
Yeah,
with a lot of those darkroom rides,
constantly
there is no line. You just like zoom right through it. But as soon as you start having any problems at all, like it just accumulates.
Well, a lot of those rides are set up too, where they are constantly moving. So you feel this pressure as a person to like get in as fast as you can and sit down. The reason I like these rides beyond the cool temperature.
Yes.
And family friendly nature is they're always like, to me, they feel kind of more like going to see a movie, you know?
Yes, exactly.
You're in this kind of intimate space with the people you're riding with. Mm-hmm. Like it's nice to ride, for example, with a lover.
Yeah, sure. Cause you can do some stuff. No, you can do some stuff. It's expected that you'll do some stuff. It's expected that you'll do a little bit of stuff. Kind of. It's
what,
in the really dark rides.
Give me an example of what you mean.
Baby.
I'm not sure what you mean when you say stuff.
You know.
You mean like look at your phone?
No.
You mean like open a piece of gum and start chewing on it?
Warmer. What else is in that pocket? So what was your favorite darkroom ride at Disney World?
Oh my gosh. I mean, Peter Pan is great.
Really?
I thought it was, it's so cool when we got in there and we're like flying above London.
Yeah, it was neat.
I know it did like kind of stall out at
a little bit.
Point.
Yeah, it stalled out right in front of a big like skeleton, and that was fun for our child.
I like the Frozen ride a whole lot.
The Frozen one
good.
Is up
Epcot.
There. There's an Avatar ride. Okay, I've never seen the film. I watched it really, really probably the drunkest I've ever been after a friend's bachelor or bachelorette, like, let's go drink and swim in a lake party. And we went back to an Airbnb we'd rented. And I watched like 30 minutes of it then, and then I got sick. And that was sort of my association with Avatar before this. Mm-hmm. They have a little riverboat ride, though, that is so it's transportive. Yeah. I felt like I was with the Na'vi. I feel like I was playing with their cool spiky dogs. I feel like the little jellyfish guys were swimming all around my head.
Yeah, the music and the lighting.
It was so gorgeous.
It's really nice. I only wish they were longer because they all ended a little too fast.
That is
for
true.
Me.
My first thing is going to be quick.
Okay.
It is simply how they have just figured all their shit out. I couldn't think of a better way to put it.
Disney, not the Na'vi.
Disney. Well, the Na'vi, I think, also are living large. I'm a very, like, meticulous planner, especially when it comes to vacations, because especially these days, like, we never take vacations. And so I see, like, my time off as this precious commodity, and any time that is spent, like, not using it to its best potential because, like, we got lost or because of some sort of confusion, I admit I get, like, way too... we have a saying in our family that we have also sort of adopted now of being on the case. This came up when we would go to like the Carolinas for beach trips because it was like the closest drivable beach. The McElroys would when we were younger, and our dad would be like, there was one year our dad drove around for like 45 minutes in the rain trying to find a Steak and Shake while all of us in the backseat were like, please just go some. There's a Wendy's. There's a Rally's. Just stop somewhere. And he was like, no. Unless you're going to help me find the Steak and Shake. Like, very, very intense. So we call that being on the case, and I get like that sometimes. Disney World is designed to relieve you of that burden in almost every imaginable way.
I was thinking of a few examples of this, actually, when I was telling my parents about it recently.
It's astonishing. So I just mentioned the minivan thing. There are so many, like, public transport options. There's, like, boats and monorails and buses. And then, like, we took the minivan a few times. You have to pay for that, but it's, like, the
They have car
easiest,
seats in them.
They have car seats in the car. That's amazing. Like, even before we got there, like, I called a couple weeks ahead because we were trying to figure out some logistics stuff. So we were like, okay, we're going to bring a pack and play. Do we need to stop at a grocery store beforehand and get diapers? So I called, we stayed at Wilderness Lodge, which is very nice. I can't recommend it enough, especially if you have kids. And I was like, yeah, so do we need to bring a pack and play? How do we get that to you all? And they're like, no, there's a pack and play in every room. A pack and play is like a little portable crib. It's so good. I'm like, okay, do we need to stop and get diapers and wipes and groceries ahead? And they're like, no, there's a grocery store in every resort. And I was like, oh my God, you all have it all figured out. The whole time you're there, you wear this little wristband that has a little, I don't know, like NFC chip, like an amiibo in it. You can use that to open your hotel room. You can use that to charge purchases to your room at literally any place in the entire like town, essentially.
And for FastPass.
And you can use it for FastPass. FastPass is a system where you get 3 a day and you reserve a spot in a very, very fast line for any ride in the park. You just have to show up within like this hour-long window that you book for yourself. And then when you've used all 3, you can book more either at the mini kiosks that they have all around the park or on the Disney Experience app, which has fucking everything.
Yeah, you can make dinner reservations.
You can
on
make
the
dinner
app.
Reservations. You make FastPass reservations.
Your pictures from the theme park.
Yeah, rides. I don't know how that happens. That is quite strange. But we would go on a ride and it would like send our pictures of us, like, you know, the Frozen ride, you go down a little slope and it takes a picture of you being all scared, and it knew it was us and sent it to my phone, which was wild. You can search for any like merch or like food item that is for sale in the park, and it will tell you where it is in an interactive map where it shows you where you are, and that map also shows you all of the wait times for every attraction near you. Like,
I don't know how they do it, man. It's insane.
It is the most streamlined. We didn't do this, but there's like a service you can do where if you fly into Orlando, we flew into Tampa, but if you fly into Orlando, you can get picked up by this huge like Disney bus and they will just get your bags off the carousel. So you check your bags in wherever you're flying out of and you won't see them again until they're in your room wherever
oh
you're
gosh.
Staying. In Disney. It's like wild how much they have like.
Can I tell you something I appreciated?
Yes.
It's very, very simple. Every ride has stroller parking.
Yes.
So, and this is just like so next level to me because they anticipated, like us, they would have a lot of kids with strollers and they would need a place to put these strollers. And so they identified very specific areas to park strollers.
Yes. Everything was so easy. Everything. I very, very quickly, like by day two, I had no anxiety the entire time I was there.
That's true.
And Rachel and I talked beforehand, like, I was excited to go to Disney World, but I know a lot of people who go many times a year, several times a year, and are acolytes of like the Disneyland, Disney World experience. And I couldn't really understand why that is, right? Like, they're not updating stuff that fast. I would see, we watched a lot of like reviews of people like going to the restaurants. They're like, this is the best food I've ever eaten. And it's like, there's no way that's true. It is still a theme park. But at the same time, like instantly, because of all this stuff and because like we had a really fun time and our son like loved every minute of it, which is like, man, that is some choice shit right there. I had no anxiety the entire time I was there because everything was just figured out. And I know, I mean, obviously you pay a lot of money. Yes, it is not cheap. Yes. To go and stay at the resorts or go to the park. And I totally understand that is like we're coming from a place of privilege, like talking about this, but I had like four anxiety-free days last week and it was so good. And I completely get why people are like this into the experience.
Yeah, it's so wise because it is very expensive and they like identified all the major stresses that come with traveling with children.
Yes.
And they made it so it's like a vacation that you want to do again because it's so rare when you have a kid that you can travel somewhere and you feel totally understood by all the parks. Yes. And accommodations available. Like I just felt so comfortable, like calling the front desk, for example, when I had a question or, you know, like I understood, like, this is their business. Their business is people with kids. And so I don't have to worry about inconveniencing anyone. This is the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of genius. Like I've heard a lot of people, including my parents, talk about how some kind of haze comes over you while you're there and you just want to invest in this like ridiculous machine. And I think it is. It's just that feeling of like,
it's covered. Yeah. Somebody's got me. Yeah. It is a nice, nice, nice feeling.
Yeah.
Also, there's just so much cool shit at that park. It feels like the whole park feels like an ARG to me. Like it feels like there's little mysteries, like all the hidden Mickey stuff.
ARG means.
At an alternate reality game, it's typically used as a like promotional thing. We made a lot of jokes about it during the Mabim TV show, like follow the numbers, the secret numbers that you see everywhere. Yeah. And go to the website. And I don't know, I feel like there's like layers of stuff at Disney World that is like so fascinating, and like all of the history of it is interesting to me. Anyway, that is our Disney block. You can now, we're gonna get back to the real world. Ugh. but to do that, I'll have to steal you away.
Boop, 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 boop.
Oh, my God. That was the best one yet. That was the best one ever. Do we have any Jumbotrons?
Yes, we do. So this is a Jumbotron for a interview podcast called Four Teenage Girls.
F-O-U-R or F-O-R?
F-O-R.
Awesome.
Every week, 17-year-old writer and artist Bea Hyland sits down with another young woman or woman-aligned person to talk about their passions. For more information, check out 4teenagegirls.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. FORTEENAGEGIRLS.com.
That sounds like such a fucking cool podcast.
FORTEENAGEGIRLS.com. I know. It's super great.
Yeah.
I wish that kind of thing existed when I was a teenager.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Instead, I was just watching Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, not a lot of helpful material there,
not
I think.
Exactly, no.
Do you remember the Dawson's Creek Halloween episodes where they would get for real murdered each
episode? Yes. Well, it's because the guy was the...
Right. He was the Scream director, but he... It still doesn't change the fact that, like, the episode would end with, like, Dawson getting just shanked. I know,
like, everybody...
To death.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like...
Happy Halloween!
I don't want to wait! Like, or we're back the next week, and it's not. It's just him and Joey doing... Anyway, I have a Jumbotron here. This one is for Johnny, and it's from Megan, who says, "Hey, Bean, surprise, I snagged a Jumbotron." Actually says Jumbotron, which I love. There's so many fun ways to say Jumbotron. Based on the McRoy track record, happy B-Day, but also happy anniversary. That gives us a solid six-month span. You're a joy, an absolute delight. It's officially immortalized here. Big hugs, kisses, and a few widge licks. Love, Megan. Let's talk about what widge licks. Also, this is for August 18th, so a little bit coming in, clocking in a little bit after the birthday. What's a widge lick?
How's it spelled?
W-I-D-G-E. Widge lick. What could widge be short for?
Widget.
I googled it and I got no results. Brian. Is it talking about eating ass?
No, baby, I don't think so.
Are you for sure?
I'm not for sure. I really didn't think we had to talk about it. But, I mean, we are now,
I'm guess. Curious, though. I think he's talking about eating ass. But maybe it's not.
Well, it's funny because my next wonderful thing is...
Is eating ass? Well, let's go.
Listen, we already know that you love genre movies, film craft, and female filmmakers. So, if you love all those things, then by transitive property, you love my podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Hi, I'm film critic April Wolf. Every week, I have a conversation with a different female filmmaker about their favorite genre film. Each episode covers the filmmaking process, working in the film industry, and just, like, general geeking out about awesome movies. I've had such great guests like the Big Sick writer Emily Gordon.
To me, indie movies as of late have come to be a catch-all term for a movie that kind of defies genre.
Billy Madison and Half-Baked director Tamara Davis.
When a comedian comes and enters onto my set, they're just there to be funny, and we're all ready and waiting for them to be funny.
Horror industry veteran and actor Barbara Crampton.
That's where real drama lies for me. What's between you and I speaking right now? Where are we meeting? And what's the energy that we create between us?
And so many others. So check out Switchblade Sisters every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you want to know my second thing?
I already know it, babe. Yeah, what's your second thing?
Public libraries.
Public libraries are really the shit. Do we even need to go that much deeper?
I know.
Free books, y'all. Go get them. Damn.
I know. I had to double check that I hadn't talked about this already because I feel like I talk about going to the library a lot.
You talk about a lot of book adjacent sort of things.
Yeah. And then now I'm starting to feel like if we don't call out something on Wonderful, that means that not only do we not find it wonderful, but we don't like it.
We hate it. Yeah.
So now I feel like I need to say public libraries.
Public libraries are officially good.
Yes.
Good.
McElroy's are pro library.
Children's laughter is good. All candy, except Bit of Honey.
So libraries obviously have been around since the beginning of time. The modern public library grew out of the end of the 19th century. Philanthropists and businessmen, including Andrew Carnegie, helped to fund the establishment of large public libraries. Public libraries in North America started in the 1800s. The first large public library supported by taxes in the United States was the Boston Public Library.
That was the first one.
Well, so there is another library in New Hampshire established in 1833, but that was a small public library.
And we're talking, and by public library, we're talking about tax-supported libraries.
Yes.
Okay.
But the first kind of large city-wide library was in Boston in 1854. 1,689 Carnegie libraries were built in the United States between 1883 and 1929, including some belonging to universities. By 1930, half the American public libraries had been built by Carnegie.
Jeez.
I know. So here's where we get to like the part that fills me with hope and joy.
Okay.
The main task of public libraries is to provide the public with access to books and periodicals. The American Library Association addresses the role of library as part of, quote, access to information and equity of access. It's part of the profession's ethical commitment that, quote, no one should be denied information because he or she cannot afford the cost of a book or periodical, have access to the internet or information in any of its various formats.
That is, yeah. I mean, that is what's pure and good about the library.
I love that. Every time I walk into a library and it's just like sometimes multiple floors, just like books and movies and like all these like resources where you can like learn more and become a better person. And they're like, here,
yeah,
borrow this for a while and bring it back.
Yeah. And it's especially great when you look at it in the abstract, which is just like, here's a building full of knowledge.
I know.
And you can get knowledge in here and then you can leave with that knowledge and be able to like do more stuff and know more stuff. And everybody, it's equal to everybody. It's just how much you want to come in here and get the knowledge.
Well, and it feels like a lot of it feels kind of almost like a tribute to these creators,
yeah.
You know, like it's this usually, at least in Austin anyway, the Central Library, which I've been spending a lot of time at with Henry, is enormous. And it just feels like this big celebration of all these great people that have made these great things.
Yeah.
You get to like come and appreciate what they do without having to spend a bunch of money.
Also, they have a big chess set and the pieces are as big as Henry. Oh, it's good stuff.
Last time I went, there was somebody playing it and I had to like,
Henry
from like running onto the board.
You should have let him go. Maybe he was like a Bobby Fischer.
I know. What if he just like won the game in one move?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yeah. One of the things that's also great about our libraries here and a lot of libraries is that they're designed to be spaces to be, not
yeah.
just get in, get out. You know, they're not like convenience stores. They like have little things to do and places to sit and computers and things that encourage you to stay longer than just, you know, you would get like a can of soda somewhere.
Did your local library growing up do like summer reading programs? Because
yes.
Mine totally did.
Of course. I think all do.
Ours was if you finished a book, I remember very vividly there was one summer where I was just fucking like just tearing books apart, reading wise. I wasn't actually destroying them because if you read like a whole book and you brought it back, you got to like roll a dice and then you would move like this piece on this game board that you got to take home. And like if you landed on certain spaces, you would get like some sort of little prize. And the prizes were probably like stickers, probably nothing like too incredible, but it like blew my mind that you could do this.
I love how this like achievement focus of yours started.
This was like 1994 maybe, and they had already figured out how to gamify reading for children. I mean, this was accelerated
well,
reader.
We had the pizza thing.
Oh yeah,
like the Pizza Hut, like you read books and you could get like free pizzas or something.
Yeah. You have accelerated reader at your school? It was this program where you could read books from like the school library, and then you took like this test from this database, and it would test your like reading comprehension and to make sure that you got it. And if you got like if you passed the test, then like for each answer you got right, you got a certain number of points. And like for a way longer book like War and Peace, which nobody read because it was like middle school, but if you read all of War and Peace, and like the questions were worth way more points because you read way more pages. And I did figure out how to quit the test before it counted my answers so I could learn which ones were the right answers. And so I totally faked like, holy shit, War and Peace, Les Miserables, a lot of Moby Dick, like a lot of them, like I just memorized what the answers were. And then I was like, I think I got like some roller skates. I forgot about that. But libraries and actually reading books are so...
What to do with you sometimes.
Libraries are so good though.
I don't know what you're talking about, by the way. We didn't ever like take computer quizzes about books to
okay.
get roller skates.
Well, 90s kids.
Yeah, so I feel like libraries are kind of like a symbol of like this kind of faith in people and the pursuit of learning. And it's like something that was founded obviously like hundreds of years ago, but like continues to stand as this like community center for like people to learn and share an interest in like research and entertainment. And the access piece really speaks to me too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when I was a kid, you know, like I absolutely loved reading. And, you know, my parents weren't going to go out and spend hundreds of dollars on me to read a bunch of books that I would finish in like 2 days and never read again.
Yeah.
You know, so we used to go to the library in the summertime and I would get really interested in children's authors. There's this one author that I was super into as a kid called Mary Downing Hahn. And she wrote all these novels for kids. And I have never heard anybody talk about her. I like Googled her to see if this was like a thing. A lot of people haven't talked to her about her. So I'm hoping some of our listeners will shout out my love for her. But I just remember going in the library and learning exactly where all her books were and like immediately walking to that section and like pulling whatever additional book was off and just like having those memories of libraries. Like I still get that feeling anytime I walk into a library.
Yeah.
And so it's just seemed worth mentioning to me.
Yeah.
This is super great.
I mean, for me, it was mostly Goosebumps and Animorphs.
And rolling a dice so you could get stickers.
Yeah. But, I mean, there was something pleasurable about reading the Animorphs. And there were so many. There were like 80 Animorphs books. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to fucking buy all of those.
It's also how I watched most of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I would get the DVDs from the library.
Oh, we would like rent movies from the library because Blockbuster was a little rich from our blood.
Well, I did that a lot as an adult, too. Like, definitely.
I think we watched a season of Survivor from the library, mm-hmm. which was great because we'd have to, like, we'd watch, like, 8 episodes and you'd be like, okay, off to the library to get the next 8 episodes. Oh, somebody's already got the next 8 episodes. We'll wait. do you want to know my second thing?
Yes.
I think I'll be quick again with my second thing. It's a YouTube channel. It's all I do. It's all I do is watch YouTube.
I'm wondering about that.
I'm wondering about it too. What is happening to me? No, we were just on tour. So we did Orlando right off the Disney trip, which I'm not going to do that again, is do a week at Disney and then a week in a tourist. That was a little bit off, a little bit. My eyes are a bit bigger than our stomach there. But I had one day where I was like in Atlanta. I was just in the hotel room like all day and I was just watching YouTube. And I stumbled upon this channel called Red Means Recording. And this is a music channel. It's a guy named Jeremy Blake, who is like an electronic musician. And he does a lot of really cool stuff, mostly with like different synthesizers. I think what got me like really interested in it is like on a surface level, I find like specialized synthesizer equipment really interesting because it's all doing like kind of the same thing, which is like changing a waveform to produce like a certain kind of sound, and then like the crazy billions of different like pieces of technology that do that. I find very interesting, and his channel is all about that. But he has this series of videos that he does where he uses this keyboard called the OP1. It's from a company called Teenage Engineering. I know this because I want one so very badly, but they are $1,000.
Have you looked on eBay?
Yeah, they're $1,000. They're also incredibly hard to find. So on eBay, they're actually like, it's used. It smells like cigarette smoke. 4 keys are missing. $1,500. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I went down a rabbit hole watching the videos that he does. So this keyboard, the OP1, it is very sleek. It is very fucking stylish. And it basically does like everything that like a digital audio workspace like Logic Pro X or GarageBand or Ableton, or like I use Logic Pro X now to like make music for Adventure Zone. It kind of does all of that stuff, but just with 4 tracks in this tiny little keyboard that is so cute. And I could like put in my backpack and like take on a trip with me. And
well, what's cool about the videos is he really like shows you how he puts it together.
So I was talking exclusively about how cool this keyboard is, but what he does, these videos are like 20 minutes long and he starts with nothing. Maybe he has like some samples so the keyboard can like take in samples. You can like upload them to it, or you can just record it with a microphone, or off like a line in. It also has a radio tuner in it, so you can just like record shit off the radio and then use that as a sample to play. So maybe he'll start with like a little bit of something, but then you will watch him like, okay, let's play some drums, and they'll lay down a beat, and okay, that's good. Here's the melody, and we'll play the melody. And like constantly tweak and change things. Like, okay, here's the drums. I'm going to add like maybe just some hi-hats on top of all of that. You see every part of the song getting made.
He's like putting it in text above too.
Yes, there's he doesn't talk at all. It's just through this text that appears on screen, and it's still like very entertaining, and a lot of personality comes through it. And it's also like really educational because it's like telling, like you're learning a lot of stuff about like, what different effects do to different sounds. Like this drum doesn't match with like the rest of the song, because the rest of the song has this like crunchy feel. What kind of effects can we use on that to like make it feel crunchier? And what does the crunchiness accomplish? But it does that in like a really funny, entertaining way. And then by the end of the song, usually it ends with just the whole track, the whole like finished track, which you can also listen to. Most of his music's on Spotify. And the music's like really fucking fresh. And like, I've been listening to it in the car with Henry as we like drive to school, cause he just loves like bopping around in his little car seat. And it's really neat listening to these songs and really enjoying them and knowing that you like watched the How It's Made episode of How.
So it's not just a YouTube thing.
No, I mean, he sells all of his music and has like a Bandcamp page and a SoundCloud page and a Patreon page, which I just started supporting because he like hands out all the music that he makes through that. I don't know. I just watched so many of these videos. The music is so, so fresh. I'll play a little bit of one song right now, which like, I don't know if necessarily you get the same thing out of it without like seeing it get made. But this is a song called, I Need You, which weirdly enough, I was watching these videos and he does like a lot of like funny cut ins of like different, like a gif of like a dude dancing will just like float up from on top of the keyboard that he edited in afterwards. There's an audio sample of somebody saying boy, and there's a picture of me doing the like shh face from the Mabim Bam show.
Oh, really?
That says, pops up when it says boy, which like scared the shit out of me. I like it. It was a weird like this is not why I decided to talk about this. Like I genuinely I watched all of his videos and like was really grooving on them, but like imagine me like in my Atlanta hotel room there locked up in the room for like 7 hours like watching this video, and then my face appears in the YouTube video and I was like, what the fuck? It spooked me really bad. But this is I Need You.
It's like if I opened a jar of peanut butter because I really wanted some peanut butter.
Yeah.
And then there was like a picture of me and the peanut butter.
Yeah. It's
like the same thing.
Do you want to hear some submissions?
Yes. Oh, hey, where do people send submissions?
They send them to wonderfulpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay.
Aaron says, one of my favorite things is when the first signs of autumn start to appear, even when it's still technically summer and very hot outside. Autumn is my favorite season. So when those first few leaves or individual tree branches start to change to red, orange, and yellow, I get very excited for the upcoming fall festivities and can't stop trying to spot more leafy outliers that are changing before the rest. Oh, it's so good.
I noticed that this week, some of the leaves are changing here.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. Here's one from Amanda who says, commonly known as scary trash birds, crows are actually real smart. These bad boys can recognize human faces and voices, learn to mimic speech, and if you're nice to them, they'll remember you and tell their friends about you. I don't know about that last part.
Yeah, the last part's a little confusing to me.
Yeah, it sounded like you're like, these guys aren't ominous. They're really cute. They learn how to speak and they'll tell their friends about you. So fucking watch it, Daryl. Julia says, something I think is wonderful is a flawless parallel parking job.
Oh my gosh.
Done.
I always get so excited and I always demand whoever is in the car with me to really recognize my talent.
Which is only wild to me because you pretty much nail it every time. Like you are really very, very good at it, which is great. I got good at it living in Chicago with a car because I had to drive my friends. Well, my like two friends that I had in Chicago, like to a few places. And I drove to like, yeah. I drove a lot, more than I needed to, more I should have. And you have to fucking learn how to parallel park because it's so scarce.
I failed it on my driver's test.
Wow.
I don't know exactly how I got so expert
at it. That's what I'm saying. You weren't forged in the crucible of like a crazy metropolitan city.
No.
You're just really good at it.
Thank you.
You have the talent.
Thank you.
Do you ever see those commercials or like stunts in movies where they do like a 180 like drift around and they land perfectly in the parking spot between two cars? I have always wanted to do that. It would take me about 75 cars. 75 of the car that I am driving and then like probably 100, at least 100 of the two cars that I'm trying to like get in between.
As far as you would ruin 75 cars?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would goof them up real good. Mm-hmm. But then the one time I did it, I'd be like, that was so awesome. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Hey, thank you for listening. I was just thinking about stunt driving, how cool it would be to do it. I wish there was a place you could go and like hit a ramp. There probably is,
the
right?
The liability on that and the expenses associated.
I know.
You could be a contestant on a reality show. They seem to do that a lot.
I mean, I could also just like, when it's time for this car, I'm driving a rental car right now.
Yeah.
I could drive up to, you know, Lake Travis, build a ramp.
Stunt. And then return the car, maybe?
Well, no.
Just ruin it?
Something happened to the car. Dude, I could be like, dude, where's my car? And they'd be like, that's fine. That's legally binding. If you don't know where the car is,
yeah. Gotta get used on us. Yeah. And we just fall for it.
We just fall for it. We can't do anything about it. Thanks for listening. Thank you for all of your support. Hey, go check out Maximum Fun. They have a bunch of great shows at MaximumFun.org. Shows like Story Break and Switchblade Sisters and
Minority Corner. And Inside Pop.
And we have other shows at McElroyShows.com.
Did you thank Bowen and Augustus?
Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Justin and Sydney wrote a Sawbones book. It is very good. I got an early copy of it. Taylor, Sydney's sister, did all of the art. It is really, really funny and informative and gross and cool. And there's a picture of a big penis.
And also, besides that, super accessible for people, even if you don't listen to the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
If you have any interest in like the history of medicine or just like the history of crazy, weird treatments throughout the years,
you should listen to the podcast too. It's a really, really good podcast.
You should, but I want to make sure that people understand that it is a great gift for everybody.
It's available to pre-order on wherever you want to pre-order a book. It's all over. It comes out in October and you're just gonna love it. And I think that's it. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
thank you guys for listening.
Yeah.
Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend.
Oh, so great.
Here's to many more episodes.
All right.
And a lot less labor just going forward. In the physical kind, not the unions. Labor unions are great. Keep it bouncy. Money won't pay. Working all day. 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 Money won't pay. Working all day.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.